Today's episode is brought to you by Kind Bar. Kind is deeply committed to crafting food with real, recognizable ingredients, a disruptive notion that sparked the creation of a new, healthy snacking category. Kind is unapologetic in their efforts to challenge the status quo, to shift the food industry, and empower their community, and my listeners to make better informed choices about health. Kindness can be a transformative force for good, and that's why I'm teaming up with Kind and Podgo to bring my listeners 10% or 15% off for military, teachers, students, first responders, doctors, and nurses. Go to podgo.co/kind. That's podgo.co/KIND. Kind Bar, creating a kinder and healthier world, one act, one snack at a time. Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. Alfred Packer has been suggested so many times, and I decided to dive into it. I'm going to tell you right away that this story happened back in the 1800s into the early 1900s. So there are multiple different accounts, and I couldn't just leave every different story out. I'm not sure what the truth is here 100%. I have looked all over, and no source is the same. So this will be a bit of a journey, and this is one of those cases where a lot of this you'll have to decide which story at different points you believe. These cases are extremely frustrating to me. But you guys asked for it, and I wanted to do my best for you. Towards the end of all of my research, I did find all three of Alfred Packer's confessions and court records that are public. So some of the stories will be cleared up towards the end as to what was really said in court and what he confessed to. But you'll still have to decide if you believe Alfred or not. Also, before we get into this episode, at the end, stay tuned for a promo by The Murder Bucket. Now, let's dive in. Some sources call him Alfred, and some call him Alfred. One of the rumors is that he had his name tattooed onto his arm, but the tattoo artist actually wrote Alfred, and he just went with it. Right off the bat, we get into what other sources have said, and this will be a theme throughout this episode. I truly apologize for that, but I do have to include everything that I found. Other sources say that he couldn't read or write very well, and that's how he spelled it. He signed his name both ways on different occasions, and due to that, a lot of people call him Al or just A. However, I'm going to call him Alfred. So Alfred was born on January 21st, 1842, so we are definitely going way back for this one. He was born in Allegheny County in Pennsylvania. He was a shoemaker in his young years until he turned 20 years old. By that time, it was the 22nd of April, 1862. He took it upon himself to enlist in the 16th Minnesota Volunteer Infantry during the Civil War. When he was at Fort Ontario in New York, they let him go because he had epilepsy. On the 10th of June, 1863, he decided to re-enlist. He didn't want his epilepsy to hold him back. He enlisted in the 8th Iowa Volunteer Cavalry Regiment, but only 10 months later they let him go yet again in Cleveland, Tennessee, because he was suffering with his seizures. One report says that he served with General Custer as a scout. Alfred and 21 other people went from Provo, Utah, heading for Breckenridge, Colorado in November of 1873. Breckenridge was supposed to be a place where you could find a lot of gold, so they were on their way to dig and search for it, thinking they may hit it big and have lots of riches. Alfred was their guide. He claimed that he had driven wagons in a few mining camps, which gave him the skills to be the guide of the group. As it turned out, he didn't know a lot about the region to which they were headed. On the 21st of January, 1874, Alfred was close to Montrose, Colorado, and there he held a discussion with Chief Oray, the white man's friend. The chief told them that they shouldn't go on their adventure at least until the springtime to avoid the really bad weather in the mountains during the wintertime. Also, sorry for any mispronunciations. It happens. So, Alfred and five others in the group, which included Shannon Wilson Bell, James Humphrey, Frank Miller, George Noon, who was only 18 years old, and Israel Swan, who was around 65 years old, and they decided they would all go anyway. The other men stayed behind at the Indian camp. The six of them started their journey on February the 9th towards Gunnison, Colorado. They wanted to be the first ones there. So eventually they were lost in the Rocky Mountains. They were out of necessities and were freezing in a blizzard. The weather was extremely brutal. Supposedly, Alfred and a few others went off to hunt and explore because a lot of their food was lost while crossing a river on a raft. Some of the men were said to be deeply depressed, driven to madness, starved, angry, cutting holes in the frozen water to try and catch fish to eat, but that, along with hunting, just was not successful. When Alfred came back, he said he saw Shannon Bell roasting something over a fire. He realized it's not an animal. It's a human. Now, this is all recalled by Alfred, and he claims that Shannon came running towards him with an axe. Alfred said he had no choice but to kill him at that point. When Shannon was allegedly running towards Alfred, he shot him in the head in self-defense. There are also alternate stories galore, one being that Alfred was in fact hanging out at the campsite while the others went on the hunt for food. They did not ever show back up, so that's when Alfred made the trek to the Los Pinos Indian Agency with a gun and a type of knife used for skinning animals. These things belonged to the other guys that were with him. Some sources say Alfred stayed there at the original campsite for 2 months since he couldn't leave due to the weather. It's claimed that about the human consumption, he said, quote, "I could not eat but a little at a time," end quote. Other sources say Alfred showed up by himself looking like he hadn't missed a meal, and he was in shape, close to Gunnison, Colorado, on the 16th of April, 1874. He allegedly spent tons of money at a local saloon and ran into a lot of the guys that were originally with him at the very beginning of the gold hunting adventure, and they were at the bar. Of course, nobody knows what actually happened, but Alfred was telling people he had to protect himself and killed Shannon because he was in fear for his own life. Well, that story really didn't sit well with the other members of the original group. Charles Adam, Indian agent, hauled Alfred to the Los Pinos jail where he would be interrogated. It's said that on the 8th of May, 1874, he was caught giving two different stories. One story was that Israel Swan died along the way, and the others were starving, having been without anything to eat in so long, so they ate Israel. He said three of the men suffered from the elements and starved to death. After all of this, he tells the story about Shannon roasting and eating the human flesh, and Shannon running toward him with the hatchet and the whole self-defense story. Some sources say that after he claimed self-defense, pieces of human skin were discovered along the trail they were on. So this is another reason why people have said the self-defense story really did not fly. He was allegedly put in a jail that wasn't in the town. He eventually had to go to trial, and during it, nobody believed his self-defense claim. The judge is reported to have said, quote, Damn you, Alfred Packer. There were 7 Democrats in Hinsdale County, and you ate 5 of them. End quote. And yes, he called them Democrats. Some reports say that the judge said, quote, Packer, you depraved Republican son of a bitch. There were only 5 Democrats in Hinsdale County, and you ate them all. End quote. On the 5th of August, 1874, Alfred put his signature on a confession. He was put in jail, but managed to escape by using a penknife as a key, allegedly, after 5 skeletal remains were found. Again, we have conflicting stories saying that someone else in the jail helped him escape. Along with those remains were tattered clothing, blankets, and animals had obviously also been having a meal of what had been left. There was so much damage, even one man's head, said to be Frank Miller's, was dismembered, that you couldn't really tell if all of this had been done by animals or if it was all human-inflicted. Alfred disappeared for many years. The same day that he got away, the corpses of the 5 men were discovered. There was said to be proof of a lot of tussling around and foul play. The current gravesite is now an homage to the men who were slain. The site is marked and fenced in. In Cheyenne, Wyoming, or possibly Douglas, Wyoming, he was spotted on the 11th of March, 1833, by Frenchie Cabazon. Frenchie was one of the guys that was also in the original group of travelers setting out to find gold. He just happened to bump into Alfred, who had been going by the name John Schwartzy, or John Schwartz. Alfred said he had been to Arkansas and Arizona before heading to Wyoming. He was taken to the jail yet again to be interrogated in Denver, Colorado. This is the second time that he had admitted what he had done and also said that he did steal a rifle and some cash from the men when they died. 5 days later, he again signed a confession. Allegedly, Israel Swan was the first to die, some reports say, and Alfred had to go back to trial on the 6th of April in Lake City, Colorado, which is in Hinsdale County, for the murder of Israel. One person who viewed the decomposing bodies said there were injuries to one skull, definitely made by a hatchet, and there were minuscule evidence that this was premeditated. On the 13th of the same month, he was sentenced to death because he was declared guilty of killing Israel Swan. Court documents state that the judge said, quote, close your ears to the blandishments of hope. Listen not to the flattering promises of life, but prepare for the dead certainty of death. End quote. He was obviously sure in his mind that the motive for the murders had to be robbery, not survival or self-defense. The judge went on to say, quote, I would to God the cup might pass from me, end quote. He declared that the murder was, quote, revolting in all its details, end quote, and that the trial had been fair, with a jury of 12 impartial men. The judge was pushing the narrative of his beliefs that the 5 men had laid down to get some shut-eye, and Alfred manipulated their trust and helplessness at that time to force his attack upon them. Although he had been convicted of only one death of Israel Swan, the assumption that the judge made while scolding Alfred was that he had deliberately massacred all of the men. The judge said, quote, to other sickening details of your crime, I will not refer. Silence is kindness. You, Alfred Packer, sowed the wind. You must now reap the whirlwind. Your life must be taken as the penalty for your crime. End quote. He said that Alfred was to be hanged by the neck until you are dead, 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 and may God have mercy on your soul. There was a big back and forth about this sentencing because he appealed, and it was reversed by the Colorado Supreme Court in October of 1885. Then, on the 8th of June, 1886, he went to trial yet again, and he was slapped with a 40-year sentence in Gunnison for manslaughter. He spent a little time in the pen, but a grassroots organization in Denver made an impact on how quickly he would get off. By February the 8th, 1901, Alfred was out on parole under one condition. He could not leave the state. It was said that he made over $1,000 making hair rope and hair bridles while he was serving his time. When he was released, he made his home in Deer Creek, located in Jefferson County, Colorado. He was said to be a model citizen there, and nobody had any issues with him from what I've read. In fact, he was very well liked. It's even been said that he actually became a vegetarian. Not sure if that's a rumor for a joke or if that's actually true, but that's what a lot of reports do say. It is said that he liked children, not in a creepy way, but like a fun grandfather that enjoys his grandkids type of way. Reportedly, a lot of kids followed Alfred around, like the Pied Piper. It is said that he was, quote, mourned by the children for whom he had bought candy and spun yarns in his declining years. He passed away of natural causes in Phillipsburg, Colorado, on April 23, 1907. Littleton, Colorado is where he was laid to rest in a military cemetery. Another report says that in the late months of 1906, a game warden discovered an unconscious Alfred. He was at the Connolly Ranch about a mile from his residence. In 1940, Bishop Frank Hamilton Rice took six of his followers and one lone goat to Alfred's grave. In a ghoulish ritual, freed Alfred and the five men of their sins. It's said he relocated those sins onto the goat, and I couldn't help but get tickled when I read that the goat was not impressed or moved at all by this relocation and transferring of the sins. One of Alfred's neighbors during the time that they lived by each other, the now deceased William Couch, said, quote, Packer lived between the store and the dance hall. There were four slab buildings there then. He worked in ranches. He was an awful nice man. I was a kid at the time, and he used to talk to my dad. He did what he did to protect himself. He never was the kind of man they say he was. End quote. So I guess Alfred had talks with William about what he says happened, because William recalled, quote, Packer went off for something to eat, and when he came back, one man came at him with an axe, and he had to shoot him. They were starving to death. Packer said he tried to eat a piece of one of the man's hip, but it made him deathly sick, and he never did it again. Just after that, they found him, I guess. End quote. There are things that were found that make people lean more towards Alfred being a cannibal because he had to, not because he was a killer. It was on July 17, 1989, when all five bodies were exhumed by James E. Starrs. At the time, James was a professor of law, and he specialized in forensic science at George Washington University. There was a massive hunt for the exact spot of the remains at what is known as Cannibal Plateau in Lake City, Colorado. James and his partner in this case, Walter H. Berkby, came to the decision that, quote, I don't think there will be any way to scientifically demonstrate cannibalism. Cannibalism, per se, is the ingestion of human flesh, so you'd have to have a picture of the guy actually eating. End quote. But what they did find was defensive wounds on a few of the men, hatchet injuries, and that their skin was basically peeled like an apple with some kind of knife. Some people think that this wasn't technically murder because he desired to, but killing to have something to eat, because one of the stories that's out there is that Alfred said Shannon killed four of the men, that he killed Shannon in self-defense, and since there was no food to be found, he said it came down to him having to eat the meat that was there, which was that of the deceased men. Alfred said that that was the only way he could have survived. This was the second confession that he signed off on. However, he signed three confessions during all of this time, and all of his stories didn't match up. So, where the real truth lies, I don't think we will ever know. He couldn't seem to keep his lies straight about who killed whom and how exactly were they killed. It's all a total mess. The only quote-unquote truth is that Alfred confessed each time to killing Shannon after he came running at him like a wild man with a hatchet, and that he did eat some of the dead men so he could stay alive. Those are the only two things that really remain consistent throughout most of his confessions. So, I have to tell you, after writing all of this up, I found his confessions at Colorado.gov, and I'm going to read these to you in length. It's a lot, but I feel it's extremely important to do. And as always, the precise link will be in the show notes. First Packer Confession, May 8th, 1874. He says, "Old Man Swan died first and was eaten by the other five persons about 10 days out from camp. 4 or 5 days afterwards, Humphrey died and was also eaten. He had about $133. I found the pocketbook and took the money. Sometime afterwards, while I was carrying wood, the butcher was killed, as the other two told me, accidentally, and he was eaten. Bell shot, quote, California with Swan's gun, and I killed Bell, shot him, covered up the remains, and took a large piece along. Then traveled 14 days into the agency. Bell wanted to kill me, struck at me with his rifle, struck a tree, and broke his gun. I, A.G. Packer, do solemnly swear that the above statement is true and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Signed, A.G. Packer. Sworn to and subscribed before me this 8th day of May, A.D. 1874. James P. Downer, J.P. Second Packer Confession, in Denver, March 16, 1883. I, Alfred Packer, desire to make true and voluntary statement in regard to the occurrences in southern Colorado during the winter of 1873 to 1874. I wish to make it to General Adams because I have made one once before about the same matter. When we left Ori, or Array's camp, we had about 7 days of food for one man. We traveled 2 or 3 days and it came a storm. We came to a mountain, crossed a gulch, and came onto another mountain. Found the snow so deep, had to follow the mountain on to the top, and on about the 4th day, we had about a pint of flour left. We followed the mountain until we came to the main range. Do not remember how many days we were traveling then. About 10 days, living on the rosebuds and pine gum, and some men were crying and praying. Then we came over the main range. We camped twice on a stream which runs into a big lake, the second time just above the lake. The next morning we crossed the lake, cut holes in the ice to catch fish. There were no fish, so we tried to catch snails. The ice was thin, so some broke through. We crossed the lake and went into a grove of timber, all the men crying, and one of them was angry. Swan asked me to go up and find out whether I could see something from the mountains. I took the gun and went up the hill. Found a gulch and came on to another mountain. Found a big rose bush with buds sticking through the snow, but could see nothing but snow all around. I was a kind of a guide for them, but I did not know the mountains from that side. When I came back to camp after being gone nearly all day, I found the red-headed man, Bell, who acted crazy in the morning, sitting near the fire, roasting a piece of meat, which he had cut out of the leg of the German butcher, Miller. The latter's body was lying the furthest off from the fire down the stream. His skull was crushed in with the hatchet. The other three men were lying near the fire. They were cut in the forehead with the hatchet. Some had 2, some 3 cuts. I came within a rod of the fire. When the man saw me, he got up with his hatchet towards me when I shot him sideways through the belly. He fell on his face. The hatchet fell forwards. I grabbed it and hit him in the top of the head. I camped that night at the fire. sat up all night. The next morning, I followed my tracks up the mountain, but I could not make it. The snow was too deep, and I came back. I went sideways into a piece of pine timber, set up two sticks, and covered it with pine boughs, and then made a shelter about 3 feet high. This was my camp until I came out. I went back to the fire, covered the men up, and fetched to the camp the piece of meat that was near the fire. I made a new fire near my camp and cooked the piece of meat and ate it. I tried to get away every day, but could not, so I lived off the flesh of these men the bigger part of the 60 days I was out. Then the snow began to have a crust, and I started out up the creek to a place where a big slide seemed to come down the mountain of yellowish clay. There I started to get up, but my feet got wet, and having only piece of blanket around them, I froze my feet under the toes and I camped out before I reached the top of the hill, making a fire on top of a log, and on two logs close together, I camped. I cooked some of the flesh and carried it with me for food. I carried one blanket. There was $70 amongst the men. I fetched it out with me and one gun. The red-headed man had a $50 bill in his pocket. All the others together, only $20. I had $20 myself. If there was any more money in the outfit, I did not know of it, and it remains there. At the last camp, just before I reached the agency, I ate my last pieces of meat. This meat I cooked at the camp before I started out, and put it into a bag and carried the bag with me. I cannot eat but a little at a time. When I went out with the party to search for the bodies, we came to the mountains overlooking the stream, but I didn't want to take them further. I did not want to go back to the camp myself. If I had stood in that vicinity longer, I would have taken you, Mr. Adams, right to the place. But they advised me to go away, and in brackets it said he was refusing to tell the names of the parties. He goes on to say, "When I was at the sheriff, I was passed a key made out of a penknife blade with which I could unlock the irons. I went to the Arkansas and worked all summer for John Gill, 18 miles below Pueblo. Then I rented Gilbert's ranch, still further down, put in a crop of corn, sold it to John Gill, and went to Arizona." So that was the second confession. It says State of Colorado, County of Arapaho, and it says, "I, Al Packer, of my own free will and voluntary, do swear that the above statement is true, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Signed, Alfred Packer. Subscribed and sworn before me this 16th day of March, A.D. 1883. Sim W. Cantrell, Notary Public." This is Judge Jerry's death sentence of Packer, Hinsdale District Court, case number 1883DC379. So the judge says, "It becomes my duty as the judge of this court to enforce the verdict of the jury rendered in your case and impose on you the judgment which the law fixes as the punishment of the crime you have committed. It is a solemn, painful duty to perform. I would to God the cup might pass from me. You have had a fair and impartial trial. You have been faithfully and earnestly defended by able counsel. The presiding judge of this court, upon his oath and hid conscience, has labored to be honest and impartial in the trial of your case, and in all doubtful questions presented you have had the benefit of the doubt. A jury of 12 honest citizens of the county have set in judgment on your case, and upon their oaths they find you guilty of willful and premeditated murder, a murder revolting in all its details. In 1874, you, in company with 5 companions, passed through this beautiful mountain valley, where stands the town of Lake City. At this time, the hand of man had not marred the beauties of nature. The picture was fresh from the hand of the great artist who created it. You and your companions camped at the banks of a stream as pure and beautiful as ever, traced by the finger of God upon your heart and nature, the omnipotence of deity. and the helplessness of your own feeble life. In this goodly, favored spot, you conceived your murderous designs. You and your victims had had a weary march, and when the shadow of the mountains fell upon your little party, and night drew her sable curtain around you, your unsuspecting victims lay down the ground and were soon lost in the sleep of the weary. And when thus sweetly unconscious of danger from any quarter, and particularly from you, their trust companion, you cruelly and brutally slew them all. Whether your murderous hand was guided by the misty light of the moon or the flickering blaze of the campfire, you can only tell. No eye saw the bloody deed performed, no ear save your own caught the groans of your dying victims. You then and there robbed the living life, and then robbed the dead of the reward of honest toil which they had accumulated. At least so say the jury. To other sickening details of your crime I will not refer. Silence is kindness. I do not say these things to harrow your soul, for I know you have drunk the cup of bitterness to its very dregs. And wherever you have gone, the sting of your conscience and the goadings of remorse have an avenging nemesis which have followed you at every turn in life and painted afresh for your contemplation the picture of the past. I say these things to impress upon your mind the awful solemnity of your situation and the impending doom which you cannot avert. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You, Alfred Packer, sowed the wind. You must now reap the whirlwind. Society cannot forgive you for the crime you have committed. It enforces the old Masonic law of a life for a life, and your life must be taken as the penalty of your crime. I am but the instrument of society to impose the punishment which the law provides. What society cannot forgive, it will forget. As the days come and go, the story of your crimes will fade from the memory of men. With God it is different. He will not forget, but will forgive. He pardoned the dying thief on the cross. He is the same God today as then, a God of love and mercy, of long-suffering and for kind forbearance, a God who tempers the wind to the shorn lamb and promises rest to all the weary and heartbroken children of men. And it is the God I commend you. Close up your ears to the blandishment of hope. Listen not to its flattering promises of life, but prepare for the dread of certainty of death. Prepare to meet thy God. Prepare to meet that aged father and mother of whom you have spoken and who still love their dear boy. For 9 long years you have been a wanderer upon the face of the earth, bowed and broken in spirit. No home, no loves, no ties to bind you to earth. You have been indeed a poor, pitiable waif of humanity. I hope and pray that in the spirit land to which you are so fast and surely drifting, you will find that peace and rest for your weary spirit which this world cannot give. Alfred Packer, the judgment of this court is that you be removed from hence to the jail of Hinsdale County, and there be confined until the 19th of May, A.D. 1883, and that on said 19th day of May, 1883, you be taken from thence by the Sheriff of Hinsdale County to a place of execution prepared for this purpose, at some point within the corporate limits of the town of Lake City, in the said county of Hinsdale, and between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. of said day, you then and there, by the said Sheriff, be hung by the neck until you are dead, 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 and may God have mercy upon your soul. Third Packer Confession. Letter to D.C. Hatch of Denver. Rocky Mountain News, August 7th, 1897. Mr. D.C. Hatch, 842 Larimer Street, Denver, Colorado. My kind friend, your welcome favor of the 22nd institution has been received, and in reply to your request, I gladly comply by giving you as complete a statement as it is possible for me to viz. In the fall of 1873, a party of men left Salt Lake City by wagon, there being teams and pack animals. In leaving, we were deficient in supplies for the entire journey. But this matter can hardly be attributed to either myself or anyone else of the party of 21, for for the agreement was that the men who owned the teams were to furnish our sustenance. But unfortunately, our supplies were exhausted by the time that we reached the Green River, at the head of the Colorado. And now, my kind friend, let me impress upon you the painful fact that thus early in our journey we were suffering most terrible from the pangs of hunger. For about 5 days we had been surviving on horse feed, which was chopped barely. Just at this point, we, array, and a band of 50 Indians from whom we received assistance, and being informed by Chief Array that the mountains were impassable, owing to the great amount of snow, we availed ourselves of this invitation and camped within 2 miles of him, and from whom we purchased supplies. After having been in this camp for about 1 week, a man by the name of Lutzenheiser and 4 other men started for the agency. Having been informed by Chief Array that from his camp to the Indian agency it was 40 miles, while in fact by airline it was 80 miles. Lutzenheiser and his party had no other provisions, only what each man carried, they being on foot. As a result, their provisions soon became exhausted, and these 5 men had concluded to cast lot to see who should be food for the others. But just at this time, a coyote was seen, which was immediately killed and was the means of saving one of that party from a tragical fate. And as this party neared the cattle camp where Gunnison now stands, Lutzenheiser saw a cow fast in the snow and he crawled up to her and shot her with his revolver. The man who had charge of the cattle, happening to be out looking for his herd, saw the tracks which Lutzenheiser had left, and following these tracks, he soon found Lutzenheiser in an exhausted condition. He took him into this camp and followed his trail back and found the remaining 4 of the party, whom he also took into the camp, a man by the name of George Driver being the last, who was carrying the head of the coyote. Here they remained until they had become physically recruited, when they started for the Los Pinos Agency, which was 40 miles into the mountains, at which place they were again picked up in a fainting condition, all of which was sworn to at the time of my trial and is a matter of court record. And now I return to my own party, which composed 6 men, myself included. There being 2 trails to the agency, about 1 week after Lutzenheiser's party left, we took the upper trail for the purpose of reaching the same destination. We also were on foot and carried what provisions we could in blankets. After 9 days, our provisions were entirely exhausted. The snow being deep, we were compelled to keep on top of the divide in order to travel at all, and these divides led to the top of the Rocky Mountains. Our matches had all been used, and we were carrying our fire in an old coffee pot. 3 or 4 days after our provisions were all consumed, we took our moccasins, which were made of rawhide, and cooked them, and, of course, ate them. Our suffering at this time was most intense, such, in fact, that the inexperienced cannot imagine. We could not retrace our steps, for our trail was entirely drifted over. In places the snow had been blown away from patches of wild rose bushes, and we were gathering the buds from these bushes, stewing them and eating them. In following these divides, we soon gained the tip of the Rocky Mountains, and the snow being blown away from the top of the mountains and our feet encased in pieces of blankets. We were enabled to travel along steadily. Now, my friend, you can imagine our condition on top of the mountains, with nothing to kill for food, and not even any of those rose bushes. Starvation had fastened its deathly talons upon us, and is slowly but most torturously driving us into the state of imbecility. In fact, Bell, the strongest and most able-bodied man of our party, had succumbed to the power of mental derangement, and was causing the party to be very much afraid of him, as well as that which they felt to be the inevitable doom of each mentally. I am at a loss to fully express our feelings at this stage, but we consulted each other and concluded to come down off the mountain. For we could not tell whether we had passed the agency or not, for it was either snowing or blowing constantly, and as it happened, we descended to the lake fork of the Gunnison River. We camped one night just above the lake. In the morning, I ascended the mountain for the next purpose of ascertaining if there were any visible signs of civilization on the opposite side. The snow being very deep, it required the entire day to make this trip and return. As I neared the camp on my return, I was confronted by a terrible sight. As I came near, I saw no one but Bell. I spoke to him, and then, with the look of a terrible maniac, his eyes glaring and burning fearfully, he grabbed a hatchet and started for me, whereupon I raised my Winchester and shot him. The report from rifle did not arouse the camp, so I hastened to the campfire and found my comrades dead. Can you imagine my situation? My companions dead, and I left alone, surrounded by the midnight horrors of starvation as well as those of utter isolation? My body weak, my mind acted upon in such an awful manner that the greatest wonder is that I ever returned to a rational condition. In looking about, I saw a piece of flesh on the fire, which Bell had cut from Miller's leg. I took this flesh from the fire and lay it to one side, after which I covered the bodies of my dead comrades. I remained here with them during the night. In the morning, I moved about 1,000 yards below, where there was a grove of pine trees. I distinctly remember of taking a piece of the flesh and boiling it in a tin cup. I also know that I became sick and suffered most terribly. My mind at this period failed me, but I am satisfied that I must have eaten some of the flesh, but my mind was a total blank for a considerable period of time. When my mind returned, I found, by my tracks, that I had been visiting around the adjacent territory, seeking rosebuds, which I apparently found, for I noticed that by force of habit, I had been stewing them in my tin cup. The record of time now becomes a non-entity. I do not know how long I remained here. I did not know how near I was to the close of the year. I could not tell how near spring was, but the weather began to moderate and I wandered around seeking rosebuds for food, when all of a sudden I was confronted by the Los Pinos Agency. It would be a mild assertion for me to say that I was surprised, and most agree able it was, too. I found out that in my searching for food and civilization I had traveled 40 miles from the Lake Fork of the Gunnison. For 3 weeks I was taken care of at the agency. I have learned that Lutzenheiser and his party had crossed the mountains into Siwatch. The remaining of the 21 men, now at the end of this 3 weeks, came through with a band of Indians. They questioned me as to where my comrades were. I replied that I had killed Bell, and that evidently he had killed the others. In a day or two, we left the agency and started with the teams to go over to Siwatch. We remained in Siwatch until General Adams, the Indian agent, returned from Denver. I then explained to the general all I knew about my dead comrades, and an expedition was fitted out to return and bury them. We had not gone far on this journey before we were compelled to turn back to the agency, owing to the great depth of snow and the crust which was upon it. After returning to the agency, I was turned over to the sheriff of Siwatch, with whom I remained until the middle of July. At this time, the sheriff, Amos Wall, asked me if I could realize what I had passed through. In reply, I gave him as complete an explanation as I could, after which he told me to go away and not permit it to longer worry me. I did as he advised, so far as to the going away, and after the lapse of 10 years, I was arrested in 1885 upon the charge of having murdered my companions. The result of my trial is well known to all, how the Supreme Court granted me a new trial, and how I was convicted of manslaughter upon 5 different indictments, tried by one and the same jury, receiving an accumulative sentence of 40 years, being 8 years for each. Now, my kind friend, in conclusion, permit me to say that I am, today, as ever before, a member of the human family, although isolated and away from that which is dear to the heart of every man. Am I the villainous wretch which some have asserted me to be? No man can be more heartily sorry for the acts of 24 years ago than I. I am more a victim of circumstances than of atrocious designs. No human being living can say that I, in cold blood, with evil intent, murdered my companions upon that awful occasion. What could be the object of my taking their lives in a wanton manner? I bear no malice towards living man. Even though I may feel that I have been unjustly dealt with, still that supremacy which rules over all knows that I forgive as I wish to be forgiven. In this, the darkest hour of my earthly existence, I feel, as I have long felt, that I would have far better off had my execution taken place years ago, and I might now be with those companions, whose ghosts, I assure you, do not haunt me. For if the soul has existence beyond this mortal life, each and every one of those unfortunate men knows that I am innocent. As it is, there is some unexplainable power which retrains my hand from freeing my soul. Hence, all the brightness and the firmament of my earthly future is centered in the hope that I may eventually be given an opportunity of proving to the world that I am, quote-unquote, less black than has ever been painted. And to all my kind friends, I can but reiterate that my heart today, as before, abounds with thankful gratitude for your many expressions of goodwill. I should like to be set at liberty under the banner of a pardon, but if that should not be deemed best, I would gladly avail myself of the opportunity that a commute would give of showing that I came into existence under circumstances similar to that of others, and that I still possess a desire to live and do right. Oh, my friend, were it not for the flame of hope which forever burns within the human heart, life would certainly be beyond endurance. Gratefully yours, Alfred Packer. This is Governor Charles S. Thomas's conditional parole on January 7, 1901. Alfred Packer, number 1389, heretofore made application for parole, at which time his case was examined and parole denied. He has since renewed his application, which has been approved by the properly constituted authorities, the principal additional ground thereof being upon his bad physical condition. It is certified by the prison physician that he is suffering from hydrocele and Bright's disease, which, with his advanced age, makes his condition extremely precarious and continued confinement dangerous. He also presents a petition signed by leading men of different sections of the state, urging his release under the provisions of the Intermediate Sentence Act. Without changing my opinion concerning the offense, and because of the second recommendation and additional grounds therefore, I am constrained to grant the application confining the prisoner, nevertheless, within the limit of the state of Colorado. It is therefore ordered that the said application be granted and that said Packer be paroled and permitted to go at large, but within the state of Colorado, subject to the terms and conditions of said act, and the rules prescribed and to be prescribed thereunder, and the agreement to be signed by him as a condition thereof. So that concludes the court records that I could find. Now, after Alfred's death, his head was cut off and preserved. It's in the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, on display in the French Quarter in New Orleans, Louisiana. Do you think that he was a killer because he wanted to be? Should he have starved to death if the case was he could only eat what was there, even if that means eating some of the meat of humans? Maybe desperate people really do take desperate measures. Or maybe this was all enjoyment for him. Who knows? Gene Fowler, Ralph Carr, Herndon Davis, and Fred Mazzulla made the Packer story really popular. The four of them formed the Packer Club. For $1.50, one could buy a Packer sandwich and an official membership card. The card read what the rumors were that the judge said to Alfred, which was, quote, "They was civin Democrats in Hinsdale County, But you, ya voracious man-eating son of a bitch, ya eat five of them. End quote. At the bottom of the membership charter form, it continued, quote, I agrees to eliminate five New Deal Democrats, which makes me a member of the Packer Club of Colorado. End quote. Even official quote-unquote execution of Alfred Packer, invitations were drafted and signed by the sheriff of Hinsdale County. According to the Colorado Encyclopedia, in 1968, students at the University of Colorado in Boulder renamed the student union restaurant the Alfred E. Packer Memorial Grill, and in 1998, author James E. Bank penned Alfred Packer's Wilderness Cookbook. In addition, CU film students Matt Stone and Trey Parker, who would later create the hit TV show South Park, produced Cannibal the Musical in 1993. Like Packer's companions, the film was short-lived. Olive Nagel Porter has a poem, I guess, that it says, Let's not condemn poor Packer, nor crowd his soul with abuse. Though he hardly would merit approval, hunger is a valid excuse. Politicians, historians, and authors have scoured his very last bone, yet out through the timeless forever, his soul wanders alone. So my question to you is, what would you do if you were stuck out in the wilderness with a few other people, and they possibly die due to the elements, and you can't find any food? What if that is the only way for you to survive? Personally, I think I'd rather just starve if I were in that situation, because the thought of even trying to do that makes me extremely nauseous. So I think I would probably starve, but that's just me and what I think, you know, without being in that situation. So what do you guys think? I would love to know. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I love you all. And I want to give a shout out to my patrons really fast. Thank you so, so much for supporting me on patreon.com/reverietruecrime. It has been really great just replying back and forth to you guys, voting on the polls. I love to see it. Y'all have been so great to me, and I just appreciate every single one of you. So let's go down the list. Thank you to Shannon, James, Matt, Ian, Brandy, Chelsea, Maggie, Liz and Shayna, Trevor, Kara, Emily, Melissa, Lorraine, and Denise. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. And until next time, stay safe, stay healthy. I love ya.
Hi, my name's Hannah, and I'm the host of the Murder Bucket Podcast, where I talk about murder, paranormal activity, abductions, kidnapping, and weird stuff. I have new episodes come out every Monday, so be sure to follow me on social media. Facebook at Bucket Murd, Instagram at Murd Bucket, and Twitter at The Murder Bucket.